Well, I'm Shannon Simonovich. I'm from St. Xavier University on the south side of Chicago, and I'm also finishing up at University of Washington School of Nursing in Seattle. And today I'm going to talk to you about the association between household food insecurity and WIC coverage and some sociodemographic patterns that I found in doing this analysis. I do not have any relationships to disclose. And just a key outline, we'll review some of those key concepts. We've already clarified that we have a strong understanding of what WIC is, but I'll touch on it really quickly, and then I'll just kind of run through the different components of this study. So WIC, we know, is a very big program. Over half of the infants in the country are part of it each year. And I'd like to point out that part of its mission is to serve those who are at nutrition risk. So in my work, I really look at that nutrition risk that is experienced by those families. So nutrition risk is part of this collective use of terminology that we have that talks about hunger or the inability to have consistent, dependable access to food. And we call this food insecurity. And we know that it disproportionately affects our domestic maternal child populations. And recent statistics show that 1 in 5 children grow up in a home that experiences food insecurity, and that we have higher rates of food insecurity in households that have children, in homes that have income below 185% of the poverty line, and among minority households as well as foreign-born households. And food insecurity has many negative consequences on our health, both for our pediatric populations as well as in our pregnant mothers. So in pediatric populations, there are plenty of things we know, but some important highlights are obesity. So I'd be curious to see how obesity and food insecurity might play out in your data. We also know it's related to poorer general health in these children as well as increased hospitalizations. It also impacts their lifelong social skills, those emphasizing self-control and task persistence, perhaps because being hungry keeps you from really being able to focus in school or make social connections with your peers. And among pregnant women, we know that these women who experience food insecurity are at increased risk for complications. They report higher levels of chronic stress, increased depressive symptoms, lower birth weight babies overall, and an increased risk for certain birth defects. And after that baby is born, we see decreased maternal-infant interaction between that dyad. And there has been lots of work with regard to studying WIC and different health indicators, but we haven't really focused that much on WIC's ability to address nutrition risk, which we know is really core to its mission. So my review of the literature yielded 3 different studies that we know to date about this relationship between food insecurity and WIC participation. The first in 2004 was a multi-site cross-sectional survey in the DC area from 1998 to 2001, and they looked at WIC participation in infant health and household food insecurity. And they found that families that did not receive WIC assistance because of access problems reported having higher rates of food insecurity. But these results were not of significance once they controlled for sociodemographic covariates. The second study from 2011 was a longitudinal study of WIC participation from 2001 to 2006 in the Massachusetts program. And they determined that each additional WIC visit beyond that initial assessment reduced the odds of household food insecurity, indicating that there might be a dose-response relationship and that earlier and longer WIC participation might improve long-term rates of food insecurity. And most recently, just published this year, there was a study of food insecurity and food assistance participation. They looked at both WIC and SNAP in the Pennsylvania area. And they found that families who received SNAP were less likely to report being food insecure, but families who received WIC and or a combination of WIC and SNAP did not have significantly different odds of food insecurity. And this may have been impacted by the fact that they used one single survey question in their analysis rather than a more broad sweeping number of questions to assess it. So why study food insecurity in WIC? Well, we know it's important not only for the health of our populations at the individual level, but also it's an important priority outlined in Healthy People 2020. We specifically say that we're going to prioritize eliminating food insecurity among children and reducing the overall rate of food insecurity and hunger among our populations. So the purpose of this study was to explore if there is any cross-sectional state-level association between household food insecurity and WIC coverage rates. And if that relationship was detected, I was curious how state sociodemographics might be moderating that relationship. So the idea of this was to kind of provide baseline population-level knowledge. so, we used pooled time series regression models to look at this relationship between household food insecurity and WIC coverage for years 2000 through 2010. We used de-identified data and aggregated all at the state level. We had 50 states plus DC for all 11 years, so a total of 561 observations. So just to kind of clarify the measures that I used. So household food insecurity is a self-report measure in which affirmative responses to this survey dictate that the home would be experiencing conditions or behaviors related to having difficulty meeting their food needs. So in our analysis, we used a composite percentage of food insecure households with children over all households with children in each state for each year. And the original source was the current population survey, food security survey, and the state-level calculations are released by the Economic Research Service from the USDA each year. So I thank them for those. So here's a couple examples of the questions that people are responding to when they fill out that survey over the phone. So they ask about, did you ever eat less than you felt that you should? Did you rely on some low-cost foods? Were you able to offer your children a balanced meal? Did you have to cut the size of your meals? And there's 18 questions in total, so this is just a sample. WIC coverage for this analysis is expressed as a percentage and represents the number of WIC participants in a state divided by the total WIC eligible population in that state for each year. And these were also calculated on behalf of the USDA using a combination of CPS data and WIC administrative files. For our sociodemographics, we took advantage of the free and publicly available U.S. Census and intercensal estimates. So in looking at what sociodemographics to include, we looked to see if there was evidence of an empirical relationship between WIC or food insecurity, and we also took into account the availability of data and overall model fit. And the whole idea was that these sociodemographics would help to contextualize what was going on in each state during the time. So those that we were able to include in our model included rates of pregnancies to unmarried women, teenage pregnancy rates, unemployment and poverty rates, the rate of no health insurance coverage, and the percentage of Black residents, Hispanic residents, and foreign-born residents. So this is just the conceptual model for the study. So you can see that kind of outlined in black, our primary relationship of interest was how household food insecurity might be associated with WIC coverage. But we are also curious to see how sociodemographic characteristics might be influencing or mitigating that relationship. So we used STATA for all of our analyses. We conducted quite a few descriptive statistics to look for completeness and outliers and skewed variables. And because of the nature of our data doing a cross-sectional analysis, we used pooled time series data and employed a quadratic form of time so that time was kind of taken out of the equation and we looked at all years equally. And when we looked at all our associate demographics, a lot of them were operating in very similar ways. So we grouped them based upon those similarities using pairwise correlation and factor analysis techniques. So we first created the family composition index. So this joined together the rates of unmarried pregnancies and teen pregnancies. We had the economics index, which represented unemployment, poverty, and the rate of no health insurance coverage. And finally, we had the index of Hispanic and foreign-born because these two variables operated very similarly, although they represent different populations. And percentage of Black residents functioned very differently from them, so we left that as an individual covariate in our model. So this is just kind of our study characteristics. So you can see over the years of the study from 2000 to 2011, the mean rate for WIC coverage was 57. The mean household insecurity rate was 11.7%. And we saw a lot of variability with that Hispanic and foreign-born index. So I wanted to show you a map kind of demonstrating this. So this is the mean pooled Z-scores by state. So states that are darker in color in that gradient of grade have a higher proportion of Hispanics or foreign-born residents. This will be important when we get to the findings. So our results. Well, when we looked at WIC coverage and food insecurity, unfortunately, we did not see a significant relationship over time. We did see significance between WIC coverage and that family composition index, so that was unmarried and teen pregnancies. And we also saw a important interaction term between household food insecurity, that Hispanic and foreign-born index, and WIC coverage. And we'll talk about that in more detail. So in states with high proportions of Hispanics and foreign-borns, there was a significant and positive association with household food insecurity. So in these states that have high proportions of these types of populations, increases in household food insecurity rates were met with increases in WIC coverage rates. So this indicates a potential response to increasing food insecurity needs. In states that have low proportions of these populations, this interaction term became negative and the relationship weakened. So in states that did not have high proportions of Hispanics or foreign-born populations, increases in household and food insecurity were not associated with any changes in WIC coverage. And the primary purpose of this study was to explore the presence of that cross-sectional relationship, but we did not have significant results looking at just food insecurity and WIC. It may be related to the wide variety of variability among these different states over that study time. It could also be impacted by the economic climate that we had from 2000 to 2010. So perhaps if we were to study states that were in a similar region or had similar populations, we may be able to detect a significant relationship there. With regard to our family composition index, so we saw that there was an inverse relationship between teen and unmarried pregnancies and WIC coverage. So WIC coverage rates are lower in states with high rates of teen and unmarried pregnancies. And it might be related to late entry to prenatal care, lack of knowledge about the WIC assistance program. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts as well on this topic. With regard to the Hispanic and foreign-born index, we did have that significant interaction between Hispanic and foreign-born, and our findings indicate that there was a significant conditional relationship dependent upon the ethnic composition of a state's population. So why is it that we're seeing this? I'm focusing now specifically on the relationship between WIC coverage and food insecurity and the Hispanic and foreign-born index. So this isn't the first record of distinct patterns among these concepts. Food insecurity rates, we know, are higher than the national average among these two minority groups. And these populations are also more likely to enroll in assistance programs, including WIC, when they're eligible than non-Hispanic populations born in the U.S. It might be related to availability. So populations ineligible for other resources due to their recent immigration status or undocumented status in some situations may be more willing to apply for and receive WIC benefits given the program's absence of immigration-related barriers. It's more accessible and there's a simple application that might reduce their reluctance or fear with regard to interacting with government agencies. It might also be related to the limited availability of other resources, and so they might perceive the benefits of enrolling in WIC as being more substantial than other population-level groups. It could also be related to a cultural acceptability that we know has been documented among these groups. So they have high participation, WIC participation among immigrants, and it's related to networks operating within those ethnic communities, which transmit information about the availability of these types of benefits upon arrival in the U.S. Among Mexican immigrant communities, public aid, including WIC, is used as a source of transitional funding to move towards employment again. And they, in this culture, may see that assistance fosters economic integration rather than promoting dependency upon public aid system. So there might not be that stigma that is attached to WIC and some of the other groups. It could also be related to tailoring or targeted outreach to these populations. So the significant levels of food insecurity and the growing visibility of these populations might be encouraging WIC public health practitioners to tailor their outreach efforts to these groups. When the provision of WIC services in Spanish and high outreach efforts in immigrant communities might be contributing to participation in these families as well. The limitations of this study include the self-report nature of the study data. Household food insecurity is only measured once a year by the USDA, and so it might be imprecise, as we know that food insecurity is a bigger issue in the summer than it is other parts of the year, and they don't measure it until December. And the sociodemographics that we have in our study were selected based upon feasibility. So there are a number of confounders that might be impacting our data, whether it's politics or culture or attitudes in the states. But from what we know of this study so far, this relationship remains highly complex. But it definitely tells us that there are differences based upon state sociodemographics. So maybe this gives us the opportunity to tailor approaches to WIC outreach based upon the resident characteristics and work to reduce stigma associated with participating so that more families will reach out to us when they experience food insecurity. In future studies, I would recommend that someone look at states that share similar demographic composition, because maybe there's more than meets the eye. We weren't able to see a relationship with black residents or other groups of interest, and so I think that would be interesting to look at. And I do believe it would be important to do a systematic collection of self-report food insecurity from our participants when they come into WIC. That would be the easiest way to collect really accurate data on this issue moving forward. And lastly, I'd like to give thanks to my university, as well as the University of Washington, for all of the statistical help, for all of my colleagues for their support, and for all of you for being here today and listening to me. I look forward to hearing what you think of my work. Thank you so much.